Live from the ESPN Pensacola studios. It's the Glass Half Full with Jordan Glass. You could be a part of today's show by texting or calling at 850-623-1330. Now, here's Jordan Glass.
Welcome in on a Thursday. You want to be a part of the show, you can definitely do that. 850-623-1330. Again, that is 850-623-1330. Lots to talk about on today's show. Obviously, the big news with Bill Belichick and the North Carolina Tar Heels. We'll talk about that a little later on in today's show. And so much other things to get to. A couple of things kind of left over that we weren't really able to get to yesterday with Tomahawk Talk. We're talking about, you know, Juan Soto and some other things that have happened because of the moves that were made there with him going to the Mets. We'll talk about that too. But before we get into that, do want to take a second here and talk a little NFL, right? I mean, obviously, we're getting to that point in the season where really want to start kind of breaking down these teams that are in this playoff race. And I want to look at specifically the top 10 contenders for the Super Bowl this year. That's right, the Super Bowl. Not just the playoffs, but actual Super Bowl contenders. We're going to kind of look at who I feel is the top 10 contenders there and break it down. We'll start at number 10, a team you're actually going to see tonight in the Thursday night game of the week as they are taking on the San Francisco 49ers. And that will be the LA Rams. The Rams sitting here at 7-6. I know that there's the conversation of what about the Commanders and what about some of these other teams that, you know, could potentially be there at number 10? And look, absolutely. You definitely put them there at number 10. I think honestly and truthfully, for me, when I look at this, I say they belong there at number 10 because of the way they're playing right now. And plus, the 7-6 record is a little deceptive for me because when you look at the Rams, they had to deal with a lot of injuries, right? Like, look at how much Cooper Kupp and Puka Nacua are part of the offense for the Rams. They both dealt with injuries throughout the first half of this season. So this offense for the Rams really didn't hit their stride until the last couple of weeks, and we saw what they did last week against arguably the best team in the NFL, the Buffalo Bills. So I think, yeah, you kind of have a situation here where the Rams are going to be capable of not only just playing with, but beating anybody that they play. So I think it is going to set up quite an opportunity there that I do think that we are going to see this Rams team, especially down the stretch, and not to kind of tip my hat towards who I'm going to be picking in this game tonight, when we talk about that coming up a little later on in the show. But I think you're definitely going to see a Rams team tonight that is moving in the right direction. So I do think, you know, besides being healthy, you know, the tough losses early this season were just kind of based off of injuries to me. I really do think that's what plagued them, and that's why they're 7-6. This team is not a 7-6 football team when they're healthy, and we saw that on Sunday against the Buffalo Bills. So I've got the LA Rams at number 10 as far as the top 10 Super Bowl contenders inside the NFL right now. At number 9, I actually have the next LA team. I have the Chargers. They're 8-5. They're a good team. They're solid on both sides of the ball. Jim Harbaugh has them playing really good football right now. And I think the thing about it for the Chargers for me is that they're not quite to be in the level of being a serious competitor. I think, look, they're going to surprise some people in the postseason. The Chargers will get in as a wild card team. They'll get in there and they'll probably beat one or two teams that maybe they shouldn't have. They'll make a little noise, but ultimately when they match up against the Chiefs or they match up against the Bills, I just don't see them having enough firepower to last in that game. Now, if they get lucky in somehow, some way, they end up in an AFC championship game against Baltimore, watch out. There's a legitimate chance that the Chargers could knock off Baltimore and find themselves in New Orleans for the Super Bowl. There is a legitimate chance at that. But again, like I said, if they have to match up against the Chiefs, if they have to match up against the Bills, I just don't see them having enough. They need to add a couple of playmakers, especially out wide at the receiver position for Justin Herbert. So I think that 9 right now is kind of a good spot for the Chargers. They're going to be in the mix. They're going to be in the conversation. If the field gets laid out right for them and their path to the playoffs and their path through the playoffs, I should say, is in their favor, then you know what? They're going to have a great opportunity at possibly sneaking into the Super Bowl in New Orleans. If they hit that road that is set up, it's got to be set up perfectly for them. Like, right, like I said, they've got to avoid the Chiefs. They've got to avoid the Bills. I think they could probably beat the Ravens in the postseason, but Chiefs and Bills, they just don't have enough yet. They're getting there. They just don't have enough yet. Number 8 on there, the list, my top 10 for the Super Bowl contenders inside the NFL. We got the Pittsburgh Steelers at 10-3. Really good team currently in the lead for the AFC North. Looks like they're going to probably win that division if they can find a way to beat Baltimore again. That should be a division they take home. And again, what is it, the 18th straight season with a winning record for the Steelers. So Mike Tomlin's done a great job there, continues to do a great job. Russell Wilson coming into this. Look, we were all, I mean, a lot of us were ready to pack it up for Russell Wilson and say that he's done playing in the NFL, that there's no way he can kind of recapture that Russell Wilson that we saw have so much success in Seattle. But really, he's gone to Pittsburgh and he's done a good job of maybe getting close to it. I don't think he's fully gotten back to that point, but he's definitely gotten close to it. And I think because of that, Russell Wilson is definitely provided intangibles to this Pittsburgh team. It's a tough and scrappy team. Look, they're not going to win pretty, right? They're not going to blow you out and beat you by 30, 40 points like some of these other teams on this list that we'll talk about here in a minute. But they still manage to win. And that is the important thing with this Pittsburgh Steelers team. It doesn't matter if it's by 3 or 30. They find a way to win. So I really do like this. And the defense, as much as we can talk about, you know, Pickens and Wilson and all the guys on the offensive side of the ball, J.J. Watt and that defense, or excuse me, not J.J. Watt, T.J. Watt, look, they look similar. They're brothers, J.J., T.J., it's interchangeable. Either way, whoever it is, whether it's J.J. or T.J., that defense is ridiculous for the Steelers. So I really do like that team. 10-3, they should be a little bit higher on this list, but again, I think they're missing a couple of pieces, right? They're just a couple of pieces away, kind of like the Chargers were at number 9. It's the glass half full right here on ESPN Pensacola, 1330 AM, 99.1 FM. Thank you so much for tuning in. If you want to be a part of today's show, you can do that 850-623-1330. Again, it's 850-623-1330. Talking the top 10 Super Bowl contenders in the NFL. At number 7, we got the Green Bay Packers at 9-4. I really like what this Packers team have done over the last few weeks. Jordan Love, Josh Jacobs, definitely doing a great job on the offensive side of the ball. Xavier McKinney leading that opportunistic defense for the Packers. They are very, you know, I will say this about the Packers. Their defense is going to be their weak link, and that's why they're not higher on this list than 7. That defense is a weak link against teams that have good quarterback play and good receiver play. That secondary is very susceptible to getting beat by big plays. And they are actually 1-4 on the season against teams with winning records. So that's why I have them at number 7 and not even a little higher on the list. I just think that they're a good football team. They just don't play well against better team, right? They tend to play really well when they're playing teams that are struggling, and then they just kind of trail off whenever it's a good team. For whatever reason, 1-4 on the season against teams that have a winning record, that's a stat that it's hard for me to get past for the Packers. So that's why I have them at number 7. At number 6, we have the Minnesota Vikings at 11-2. Sam Darnold having a career year. I mean, this is arguably – actually, I don't even think it's arguably. I think anybody would say this is the best season – for Sam Darnold in his NFL career with the Minnesota Vikings. I mean, obviously, you know, he struggled with the Jets throughout most of his time there and has kind of been a journeyman since, bounced around a little bit. finally found a home with the Vikings. Thought it was going to be, you know, a situation where he was J.J. McCarthy's backup. Then J.J. McCarthy goes down with an injury, and suddenly it's his team. And he's done a great job of making the most of this opportunity that he's had this season. And I'll tell you what, when you got a receiver like Justin Jefferson on the outside, it makes it so much easier to do that. It makes it so much easier to do that. He is surrounded by arguably the best offense he has had as a starting quarterback. Last year, he was a backup for the 49ers, so he had a pretty good offense around him then, but he wasn't the starting QB, right? That was Brock Purdy's team. So technically, that wasn't really his offense around him. It was Brock Purdy's offense. But this is his offense, and I think this is the best one he's had as a starting quarterback inside the NFL. And you can see what he's able to do when he has that type of playmakers around him. When he has an offensive line that can help give him protection, that can help open up holes in the run game to kind of alleviate some of the pressure that he would be under dropping back to pass. So I think Sam Darnold and the Vikings offense with Justin Jefferson is playing really good football right now. The Minnesota Vikings, look, everybody wants to talk about the Chiefs. Everybody wants to talk about the Eagles and the Bills and the Lions, and rightfully so. But not a lot of people are talking about the Vikings. It was like the Vikings were undefeated, and it was the Vikings and the Chiefs, the only teams that were undefeated inside the NFL for the longest time. And then what was it, around week five, week six, the Vikings finally drop a game, and they just kind of seem to go quiet. Nobody really is talking about the Minnesota Vikings as much as they are some of these other teams. So when you look at this, I think that the fact that they're not getting a lot of attention, they're not getting a lot of love, is kind of, honestly, it's playing into their favor and it's playing into what they want. So the Vikings sitting here at number six at 11-2. And also Brian Flores. Let's talk about Brian Flores for a second here. The fact that he was the failure that he was at Miami. And I'm not trying to be harsh on him when I say that, but let's be honest. His time in Miami did not work out the way he thought it would. And so because of that, I think a lot of people were kind of curious to see how he would continue to maneuver through the NFL. And he ends up taking this defensive coordinator job there with the Minnesota Vikings, and he has turned this defense for the Vikings into a juggernaut. They are a tough and physical defense, and it's not a defense that, if I'm an opposing offensive coordinator inside the NFL, it's not really a defense that I want to face. So kudos to him for shaking off what happened in Miami with the Dolphins, with him as the head coach, and being able to move on and take over this defense in Minnesota and really do some good. And that's another big reason why Minnesota is 11-2 on the season. Our number five team on the list here, and of course we are ranking down the top 10 Super Bowl contenders inside the NFL. We got the Baltimore Ravens. Baltimore, 3-4 weeks ago, Baltimore would have been higher on this list. But I don't know what's happened to them over the last few weeks, but they are just dropping off, right? Like, they used to be the number one offense in the NFL. Now I think they're like around 16 or 17. They have just dropped off and really have kind of fallen off the radar. A couple of tough losses, including a week or so ago to the Philadelphia Eagles. You know, that was definitely a tough loss. But it's one of those things to where I feel like the Ravens are just going through a slump right now, right? Most teams, some teams are immune to this. But for the most part, most teams over the course of a season, and no matter what sport, whether it's football, baseball, basketball, whatever, if it's a team sport, there's a chance that that team is going to hit a slump. They're going to hit a wall. They're not going to play as strong and as good as they had been earlier in the season. But the good news is they tend to work themselves out of it. And I think we're kind of getting to that point to where, if that is what is happening with the Baltimore Ravens, we should be getting to a point where they're going to start working their way out of it. So only time will tell exactly whether this is just a slump for the Ravens or if there's actually some serious issues that are going on that are kind of plaguing them and causing them to have the drop-off that they've had over the last couple of weeks. Lamar Jackson, Derrick Henry, though, still both putting up MVP contention numbers, right? They're still right there in that conversation. Maybe it shifted a little bit more towards Josh Allen in Buffalo, which we'll talk about here in a minute. But I think they're still very much in that conversation. Both of them are. And look, despite being tough on both sides of the ball, they've just been out-muscled and out-manned in the last couple of games, including against the Eagles and the Steelers. And you can't have that, right? You can't have that. If you are the Baltimore Ravens, you are known for, like, right when I think about the Ravens, I think of, from my generation, I think of Ray Lewis coming out of the smoke, doing his little, you know, shuffle dance that he does coming out of the tunnel to start the game, and then just being an absolute monster all throughout the game. That's what I think of when I think of the Baltimore Ravens. And it hasn't necessarily manifested to that this year. They're a tough team, yes, but there's also been times where they've been outmanned and out-physicaled up front. And that's not something you see a lot, especially on the defensive side of the ball from the Baltimore Ravens. So that's kind of a concern for me. Plus, they struggle to win the big games, like I mentioned a moment ago. Playing the Steelers, all the talk of the week. Lamar Jackson doesn't do well against the Steelers. He hasn't beaten the Steelers much in his career in Baltimore. You know, how's he going to do against this team? How's he going to do against that team? Then they go and play the Eagles. Great opportunity for them to get a meaningful win on the season, and they just can't get it done. The Ravens are just a team that right now they can't win the big games, and they just are struggling on both sides of the football. So I have them in the top five still, but it is very close to switching them around with Minnesota, who I have at number six. It's the Glass Half Full on ESPN Pensacola, 1330 AM, 99.1 FM. Thank you so much for tuning in. I am Jordan Glass. If you want to be a part of the show, 850-623-1330, 850-623-1330. Running down the final four teams here in our top 10 Super Bowl contenders in the NFL. Number four, we have Kansas City at 12-1. Look, my thing with Kansas City, and I've talked about this on the show before, they just don't seem as dominant as they have in years past, right? Like, there have been games, case in point, a few weeks ago when they played Broncos in Denver, and that was a very close game. Kansas City needed a field goal at the end of regulation to win it. That was a game that I think last year they probably would have won by a couple of scores. For whatever reason this year, they're not as dominant. I don't know if maybe there's just some injuries that are causing them to be a little slower this year. Maybe it's just father time catching up to some guys like Travis Kelce. Who knows? Who knows what it is? But this Chiefs team just seems a little bit more vulnerable this year. They seem a little bit more beatable this year, which is weird to say about a team who is 12-1. Because nobody but one team has managed to beat them so far this year. But the thing about it is how many of those 12 wins that they have at being at 12-1 were close ball games? Quite a few. Quite a few. So for me, when I look at the Kansas City Chiefs, the reason I have them at four and I don't have them any higher on this, it's because of how many close games they've had to win. Now, yes, good teams win close games. I am not going to disagree with you on that whatsoever. Good teams win close games. But the number of close games they've had to play this year is really what kind of worries me for the Kansas City Chiefs, right? When you get into the postseason and it is really good teams every single week, how are they going to react if they fall down early? Are they going to have enough to come back into the game? Obviously, Rashee Rice going down with a season-ending injury hurt them, but they bring in DeAndre Hopkins. They bring in Hunt to go match up when Pacheco is out. Now that Pacheco is back, you would think this offense is going to pick up a little bit more rhythm. We'll see if it does, in fact, play out that way. But right now, Kansas City sitting at number four. At number three, we've got the Philadelphia Eagles at 11-2. This is a good team. Vic Fangio's defense is a defense that is sound in technique and physicality, right? They're going to beat you up front. That's a big reason why they were able to beat the Ravens a couple of weeks ago on the road, is the way that they played defensively up front in that front seven. So I think Vic Fangio's done a great job. You've got guys like A.J. Brown, Devontae Smith, and, I mean, of course, Saquon Barkley. Saquon Barkley giving them everything that they paid for him in free agency this past offseason and then some. So Saquon Barkley definitely doing his job. My worry here is the frustrations because there is some frustrations happening now between Jalen Hurts and A.J. Brown and just how much the passing game has struggled over the last little bit of time. That's really kind of been something that is been a point of frustration on the sideline for the Eagles. And it's weird to think that a team that's 11-2 and has won, I don't know how many games in a row, that they're griping and complaining with each other on the sideline, but they are. And I'm worried that that might be something that kind of, it does cause some issues. So we'll have to see how that plays out for the Eagles. They've got some tough games coming up to close out this season. Buffalo, they are at number 2 on this list of top 10 Super Bowl contenders. They are 10-3. Sean McDermott's defense and situational executions is going to be what costs them a chance at the Super Bowl. If anything costs them a shot at the Super Bowl, it's going to be Sean McDermott's situational execution. How he handles those late-game decision-making times, that's what's going to be whether they win or they lose coming up in the postseason. But when you got a guy like Josh Allen, that's always going to be able to kind of balance any coaching error, and it's going to be able to bounce it out whenever you have a guy like Josh Allen at the quarterback position. And the Bills' offense, by the way, really the entire team, on fire, scoring 30 points in 10 games this season. So 10 of the 13 games they've played, they've scored at least 30 points. And that's definitely a very hard feat to accomplish. And then finally, a number one team, the Detroit Lions at 12-1. And I think this is the year for Detroit. If there was ever a year for the Lions to get to the Super Bowl and maybe even win the Super Bowl, it is going to be this year. They've got all their combined talent group on offense is easily the best in the NFL. You've got Jared Goff at the quarterback position doing what he does. The defense continues to be stout despite the injuries. Like, you see guys go down with season-ending injuries for the Lions, and you think, well, that's going to hurt their defense, and it doesn't. The defense actually might even get stronger after that. So, really, there's just kind of the Lions right now, like I said, it's their year. If anybody is going to win it, Detroit definitely deserves to win it this year. The only thing I might caution or question on the Detroit Lions is the aggressive nature of Dan Campbell. And because that's only because sometimes being aggressive can come back and bite you in the butt. That's the only reason why. We'll take our first time out of the show. We'll have more of the glass half full coming up right after this on ESPN Pensacola.
You want it? You got it. NFL football on ESPN Pensacola. Sunday, the Green Bay Packers take on the Seattle Seahawks at 7 p.m. The Seahawks lead the NFC West. Can Green Bay put a dent to that record? Catch every pass, every play right here. ESPN Pensacola. Sunday in NFL play, the Green Bay Packers take on the Seattle Seahawks at 7 p.m. on ESPN Pensacola.
It's the glass half full with Jordan Glass. Be a part of today's show at 850-623-1330. Now, here's Jordan Glass.
Welcome back in on this Thursday. It is 9:26 here at ESPN Pensacola, 1330 AM, 99.1 FM. If you want to be a part of today's show, 850-623-1330. You can definitely text or call that number. Again, it's 850-623-1330. Some new coaching news to get to in college football. And yes, we'll talk about that one coming up in a minute. But before we get to that one, how about Rich Rod? Rich Rodriguez heading back to West Virginia. That's right. Rich Rodriguez, the new head coach for the Mountaineers. And I like it. I like it. We're seeing Scott Frost go back to Central Florida. We're seeing now Rich Rod going back to West Virginia. And let me tell you something. He had some success with West Virginia. I'm definitely looking forward to seeing what he can do with these guys. And, you know, try to look if he can get another Pat White into West Virginia, another talented mobile quarterback like that, it could get fun with West Virginia. So I like the hire. I'm definitely a fan of that. Some other news from the world of coaching in college football. Looks like it's not official yet, so don't go bragging around the water cooler to your buddies that you know this before it's actually announced, because it's not official, but it is looking more and more and more like Dan Mullen will actually be the next head coach for the UNLV Rebels. So that's news. That's news. Was not the job I was expecting Dan Mullen to take. Honestly, I thought Dan Mullen would have been a great fit at Central Florida. Offensive-minded coach, exactly what they look for. Small enough school with big enough prestige to where, you know, he'd be able to go in, be a part of a Power Four conference, and honestly, a Power Four conference that he could probably win and get into the college football playoff with a team like UCF. So I thought UCF would have been a great job for Dan Mullen. Obviously, they go back to Scott Frost, like I mentioned a moment ago. But, yeah, so it looks like he's going to be heading out to UNLV and coaching the Rebels. And I think it's – look, he's going to be able to have success. You're talking about a guy who's won as a head coach. He's won over 100 games in the SEC between his time at Mississippi State and Florida. He's going to have success there in the Mountain West. So I think UNLV is a good – look, I think it's a win-win for everybody. Dan Mullen gets back into coaching. He's at a place where he's going to be able to win ball games, and we saw it this year, right? Now when we have the 12-team playoff and we do have an automatic highest-ranked G5 conference team getting into the playoffs every year, all he's got to do is be the highest-ranked G5 conference champion, and he's in the college football playoff. So I think it's a smart move by Dan Mullen because, A, it gets you back out into the coaching world, but also it's a job to where you could pretty easily and pretty quickly, especially with the roster they have in UNLV and the teams that they fielded this year, if you get majority of those guys coming back next year and you continue to grow this program the way that Dan Mullen can grow the program, I think eventually what it's going to do is it's going to open up the door for him to get back to a major program inside a Power Four conference. So, like I said, win-win for everybody with Dan Mullen heading to UNLV if it does happen. Again, remember, nothing is official with that just yet. So, and that'll probably be the way it usually works is either it's announced while we're doing the show or it'll be announced shortly after we get off the air here on the Glass Half Full, which, by the way, you are listening to the Glass Half Full here on ESPN Pensacola, 1330 AM, 99.1 FM. If you want to be a part of today's conversations, 850-623-1330. Again, it's 850-623-1330. And, of course, we are talking head coaching news in the world of college football, and we can't talk about that without mentioning Bill Belichick. That is right. Bill Belichick officially the new head football coach for the UNC Tar Heels. I have mixed feelings about this. Look, can Bill Belichick coach ball? Absolutely. Does he know how to break down an offense and break down a defense and set his team up in the position to where they can go out and win? Yes. There is no debating that. There is no arguing that. I know there might be some people that will say, well, all the success he gets credit for in New England was really because of Tom Brady. But I don't think that's the case. I think Bill Belichick is a guy who knows football. He knows how to coach the game. And these teams are going to be prepared for sure. My question, though, with Bill Belichick as the head coach of a college program is how does he handle the players that he will be dealing with? Because I know you can sit there and say, oh, well, he dealt with young players in New England. Yeah, he dealt with them when they were 23, 24 years old. That type of young. Not 19, 18 years old, fresh out of high school. There is a difference there, right? There is a difference there. And let's be honest. And I think this was a great tell before the NFL games on Sunday during the pregame show on Fox. They had Julian Edelman, they had Tom Brady, and they had Rob Gronkowski all sitting at the desk because they're all part of the Fox broadcasting family. And they were talking about Bill Belichick and the potential of him taking this job. And they asked all three of them who have played extensively for Bill Belichick in New England, they asked him, they said, is he a guy that can be a head coach at the college football level? And just about at the same time, all three of them said no. They said no. And I think Tom Brady gave an example of exactly why. And it's one of the examples that I kind of talked about a little bit on Friday of last week. It's that when he's recruiting, you know, and Tom knows Bill better than just the, probably about any other player that's played under Bill Belichick. So he knows how he's going to operate. And he's talking about how Bill will just go into a recruit's house and be like, look, we really don't want you here at UNC, but I mean, I guess we could find a place for you. So if you really wanted to come play at UNC, we could, I mean, we could put you on kick return maybe, but that's probably about it. Like, that's going to be recruiting pitches from Bill Belichick, because Bill Belichick does not beat around the bush. Bill Belichick does not care about your feelings. He's going to speak his mind. He's going to say the way it is. How is that going to translate when you're sitting in the living room of an 18-year-old kid and you're talking to his mom and dad? How is that going to translate? That's my biggest worry, and that's my biggest concern here. How does that translate? As far as some of the other stuff that I've heard Bill Belichick talk about, he was on the Pat McAfee show within the last week talking about this, and he said if, at that point in time, if he does take this job and it becomes the head coach at UNC, he's going to treat it like it's a pipeline to the NFL. He's going to go get players who have the ability and the caliber to play inside the NFL. He's going to make sure it is an organization that is set up like an NFL team. He's going to have the nutrition experts. He's going to have all the health and training experts there. Every asset that they have in an NFL team's facility, North Carolina is going to have that. And on paper, that sounds fantastic. It sounds great. There's actually a little hope and promise there. But again, what holds me up is, how is he going to get the players into UNC? How is he going to bring those players? I think in the state of North Carolina, he's not going to have a problem getting players from the state of North Carolina. But how does he go into Florida? How does he go into Georgia? How does he go into those states and compete with a Billy Napier, with a Mike Norvell, with a Scott Frost, with a Mario Cristobal, with a Kirby Smart? How does he go into Alabama and recruit against Hugh Freeze and Kalen DeBoer? How does he go into Mississippi and recruit against Lane Kiffin? It is going to be very interesting to see, because he has no college expertise. I mean, when you think about it, these guys that he's going to be recruiting against know how to recruit. They know how to go into a guy's home. They know what to say to the guy to get him to want to come and play for them. Bill Belichick doesn't necessarily know that. And I think that could be a very big problem for him. And I look, honestly, I'll leave it with this. This whole situation with Bill Belichick is going to go one of two ways. It's either going to be great and he's going to turn that team into a powerhouse and a dynasty, like Paul Feinbaum said yesterday, or it's going to be a nightmare and he's not going to be there long. The thing that does make me chuckle about this is the fact that North Carolina fired the oldest Division I coach in college football just to go hire the oldest Division I coach in college football. Bill Belichick only a year younger than Mack Brown, who he's taken over for. You can't make this stuff up. You can't make it up. It's The Glass Half Full on ESPN Pensacola, 1330 AM, 99.1 FM. Thank you so much for tuning in here on this Thursday, 9:37. If you want to be a part of the show, 850-623-1330. Again, it's 850-623-1330. Already talking about expanding the college football playoff teams to 14 instead of 12, because that's what happens when Alabama doesn't make it. I'm kidding. Partially kidding. But to a point, it's got a little bit of truth to that. But for the most part, in 2026, there was always going to be kind of a conversation of moving to 14 teams in 2026. But definitely this year, with the conversation that's been had with the college football playoff, with Alabama and Miami being left out of the college football playoff, there has been a lot of more conversations about that. So next year, will have 12 teams, and then in 2026 could possibly be 14 teams. So if you like the 12-team playoff, don't get used to it because there's a good chance that it could be 14 teams when we hit 2026. Executive Director of the College Football Playoff Committee, Rich Clark, was at a conference, and he told members that adding an additional two teams for the 2026 playoffs is very much in play and very much on the table. He also said that staying at 12 teams is also on the table. But was kind of a little bit less adamant about it being on the table than the 14-team playoff. And I think this is just – I do think this does have to do with a little bit that the committee is getting pressure, right? The committee is getting pressure from people from Miami, from people from Alabama about why those teams did not get into the college football playoff. Because if you look at it, if they go to 14 teams, Alabama and Miami both get in. There's no question, right? No question. As a matter of fact, Alabama Athletic Director Greg Byrne came out and posted this statement on social media. This was around, I think it was around Monday after the announcement was made for the college football playoffs. He said, disappointed with the outcome and felt we were one of the 12 best teams in the country. Of course, talking about Alabama. We had an extremely challenging schedule and recognized there were two games in particular that we did not perform as well as we should have. We have said that we would need to see how strength of schedule would be evaluated by the committee. With this outcome, we will need to assess how many Power Four non-conference games make sense in the future to put us in the best position to participate in the CFP. That is not good for college football. And here's my thing, and this has been my stance on this when this conversation comes up, because this has really been where Alabama fans have gone with this as far as kind of trying to justify why they should have gotten into the college football playoffs. And that has to do with the fact of their strength of record as far as non-conference goes. Your strength of record in non-conference was not that good. And talked about this on Monday's show. And I will talk about this until I'm blue in the face to any Alabama fan that's willing to listen. Your conference record was not that good. Right? Your toughest game was, what, Wisconsin on the road? So your toughest game was against a 5-7 team on the road, a game in which you won pretty handily. So no, Alabama, I just, when your other games are teams like South Florida, teams like Mercer, I'm just not buying that you had this tough non-conference schedule when it's Western Kentucky, South Florida, Wisconsin, and Mercer as your out-of-conference schedule. The argument you should be making is for your in-conference schedule. Because SMU did not have to play a Georgia, a Tennessee, Missouri, LSU, Oklahoma. They did not have to play those teams. And I think that's the argument that Alabama fans need to hang their hat on. Not strength of non-conference schedule. Because I'm going to tell you what, your non-conference schedule this year, Bama, it was Charlotte. Or not Charlotte, it was Charmin. It was Charmin toilet paper. It was soft. So the whole argument of, well, we need to look at out-of-conference schedules and see how much that affects teams, that's not an argument Alabama wants to have because it's an argument they'll lose each and every time. I'm telling you that right now. The committee will look at that and go, huh, I don't see anything here that's worth us putting them in the college football playoff over an SMU or over a Clemson, especially after the conference championship they had in Charlotte. We'll take a timeout. We'll be back with more of The Glass Half Full right after this.
ESPN Pensacola, 1330 AM, 99.1 FM is your home for the NFL primetime games on the radio. That's Thursday night football, Sunday night football, and Monday night football. Also, be sure to catch the early games Sunday mornings when the NFL is traveling overseas.
So how do you know which games we're carrying?
Easy. Just follow us on Facebook, /ESPN Pensacola. ESPN Pensacola. All sports, all the time.
It's The Glass Half Full with Jordan Glass on ESPN Pensacola, 1330 AM, 99.1 FM. Be a part of today's show at 850-623-1330. Now, here's Jordan Glass.
I'm going to be completely honest with you. I love that version of the song, but every time it comes on, all I hear is Peter Griffin. That's just me. Welcome back in to the Glass Half Full. ESPN Pensacola, 1330 AM, 99.1 FM. You want to be a part of the show, 850-623-1330. Again, it's 850-623-1330. Couple of other football stories before we move on. Talking a little baseball. NIU, Northern Illinois, they are known best this past season for that big win they had on the road in South Bend against the Notre Dame Fighting Irish. So they are actually looking at taking a step towards a new conference. They are considering an offer to join the Mountain West Conference as a football-only member. So they wouldn't transition. So you know how Texas and Oklahoma moved everybody over to the SEC, football, baseball, soccer, softball, all that stuff. So they want to move them all the way over to the SEC. Northern Illinois, they want to just make it football, so they're just going to stay there. Let's head to the phones real quick. Looks like we got Ronald. Ronald, what's going on, buddy?
Okay, Mr. Jordan Glass, I'm going to try to make this really quick on as far as Belichick goes, dude. I'm not really sure how well he could reach the kids. You know, there's this modern-day kids, Belichick, you know, with his age and all, and, you know, what we know to be his personality. But I don't think the celebrity aspect is being spoken of enough. You're saying as far as recruitment in the kids' living room, what comes along with Belichick is the possibility of Gronk may be around, Brady may be around, Edelman, Randy Moss. Belichick is highly considered, you know, I guess you would say somewhat the coach of Lawrence Taylor with the Giants. He was the defensive coordinator. I mean, dude, it's UNC. Push come to shove, all else fails, dude. Belichick can give Mike a call. Come down and speak with the fellas, dude. I'm not sure how well he could relate to the kids, but I don't know how much of a problem recruiting would be.
Yeah, you know, Ronald, that is a good point that honestly and truthfully I didn't even really think about. I think, you know, hey, bring Gronkowski with you on a recruiting trip. I don't necessarily know if that's a violation to bring a former player of yours in or not. But, man, that would definitely be something that I could see being a benefit for him on the recruiting trail. But, again, it's just that course, just crash nature of Bill Belichick where he just tells it like it is an 18-, 19-year-old kid who's pretty much had his whole community kisses you-know-what because of how good at football he is. Is he going to really want to, you know, deal with something like that? We got John on the lines. John, how's it going, buddy?
Hey, how's it going? See, you remember me, eh?
Yes, sir.
Hey, well, you know, man, you touched on a lot of things, man. And, there's just so much information that we're getting out of your show, man. I really like the guy from Florida State that I talked to a couple of times. And you guys are not just talking about Florida State and the ACC. You tell the truth about each conference, and I'm really loving that. You know, the thing about Alabama and the Alabama fans is that they don't understand that Alabama lost three games, you know, and they didn't just lose three games. They lost three games to the bottom of the SEC. You know, you're talking about you lose to Vanderbilt. Vanderbilt was, 3-4 at the time. You know, you lose to Oklahoma, 5-5 Oklahoma, and you get blasted. You travel 1,000 miles to kick a field goal. I mean, you don't deserve it this year. They lost it on the field. And like you were saying earlier, this is what happens when Alabama don't get in. And I really hate to hear a lot of the commentators talking about, can you imagine Alabama not getting in, you know? That's favoritism, and I'd like to see that stop.
No, hey, John, I'm right there with you, man. Look, the scarlet letter used to be a bad thing. You know, you have a scarlet letter on your chest, that was a bad thing. It seems like in college football, a crimson letter gets you in the college football playoffs no matter how lost you have, at least to the fan base way. But, yeah, look, 9-3 on the year, and like you said, I think that's a great point. Vandy currently sitting here, like final rankings for the SEC, they're at 3-5. Oklahoma right behind them at 2-6 in conference play. So, outside of beating Alabama, Oklahoma won one other game inside the conference. So that is very telling to those losses. And the fact that they lost to Oklahoma by 21 doesn't help either. So I'm right there with you, John, buddy. I appreciate the call, man.
All right. Well, you know, let me say one more thing. If that was, say, take a team like Ohio State, if Ohio State had lost two games and one of those games was to a 5-5 team, they wouldn't even be in the conversation.
Yeah, well, I mean, that might be the case. I think Ohio State would get a little favoritism as well. I mean, obviously, they didn't drop too much after that loss to Michigan in the college football playoff ranking. So I feel like they would probably get a little bit of a special nod from the committee as well. There's a group of teams that I think can kind of maybe have a little bit more of a grace period than some of the other ones. I mean, you look at an Ole Miss, you look at a South Carolina, or even a Miami. With those schools,
yeah,
they pretty much got to be one loss or undefeated to get in, whereas, you know, an Ohio State, yeah, an Alabama, a Georgia, they get a little bit more of a lenience from the committee.
Yeah, yeah. Uh-huh. Well, when you rank them all high at the beginning of the season without stepping on the field, I mean, they got to play each other. And, I mean, I could see if you say we come in the next season by how you finished, but it's always an eye test with the SEC now. And, you know, well, hopefully you guys will get it straight.
We'll see what we can do, John. Hey, buddy, I appreciate the call, man. Got to cut it short, unfortunately, because we are up against our final timeout. So we will take that final timeout. When we come back, we'll wrap things up with your headline roundup right here on The Glass Half Full.
This is Wayne Barr from Anderson Subaru, wishing you a wonderful Christmas and a happy new year. God bless.
May your Christmas be filled with joy, love, and laughter. This is Pensacola Hardware, wishing you a Merry Christmas and a happy new year.
Hi, this is Abby at Stillwater's Day Medical Spa, and we're wishing you a happy holiday.
Hi, this is Leslie Perino with EW Bullet, wishing everyone happy holidays.
This is Riley from Drip Parlor Downtown, wishing you happy holidays to you and your family from ours.
Hey, if you own or manage a business in the greater Pensacola area, how would you like to get your business in front of men ages 25 to 54? Well, that's who listens to ESPN Pensacola.
Hey!
Okay, men ages 25 to 54 and Sarah.
Excuse me?
And Jill. Whether it be a radio ad with ESPN Pensacola or online through ADX Digital, we can come up with the best solutions for you. Get in front of men ages 25 to 54 and Sarah and Jill.
Woohoo! Yeah!
Just go to our website, ESPNPensacola.com, click on the sales opportunity.
It's The Glass Half Full with Jordan Glass. Be a part of today's show at 850-623-1330. Now, here's Jordan Glass.
Wrapping things up here on this Thursday morning, 9:55 here at ESPN Pensacola. Thank you so much for tuning in. Quick programming note, looks like we will have War Eagle Weekly coming up at 10 a.m., so we'll get the guys in here, talk a little Auburn football for you, and maybe, who knows, maybe touch on a little Auburn basketball as well. Rams and 49ers coming up tonight. Westwood One's coverage of Thursday Night Football right here on ESPN Pensacola, 1330 a.m., 99.1 FM, and by the way, you can also listen streaming on the ESPN Pensacola app. It is free for your Apple and Android device. And if you miss a second of The Glass Half Full, don't worry. Each show is available in podcast form online at ESPNPensacola.com. So if you missed half of the show this morning, you can go back and check it out. If you missed Monday's show, you can go back and check it out. They're all posted there. Again, just ESPNPensacola.com. You click on that local podcast tab, and it'll have them all listed out right there for you. We even have Roll Tide Radio episodes and War Eagle Weekly episodes listed on there for you as well. All right, let's get to today's headline roundup. We're going to start it off. Joe Burrow, one of the latest professional athletes. We've got an epidemic happen this year. I don't know if epidemic's the right word, but we've got an issue this year with professional athletes playing sporting events or going to sporting events and getting robbed at their house. Joe Burrow, the latest one. He's playing the Cowboys on Monday night. Somebody broke into his house. Hopefully they can catch whoever did that. Mike Shula, you remember that name, Alabama fans? He has been promoted to the offensive coordinator there at South Carolina. Big in the development of Lenore Sellers there for them at the quarterback position. So he's going to be their OC. Speaking of OC, former Auburn and UCF OC Chip Lindsey has accepted the same position at Michigan, so they found their offensive coordinator. The Rangers are making a trade with the Marlins for Jake Berger. The Yankees signed starting pitcher Max Fried to an 8-year, $218 million deal. That is definitely big for them. They saved some money by not bringing in Juan Soto, and they're able to add him to that starting lineup there with Garrett Cole, Carlos Rondon, and Clark Schmidt and Lewis Gill, who that's – That's going to be a formidable starting five lineup there for the pitchers in the Bronx. Nolan Arenado open to moving to first base from third base to help facilitate that trade from the Cardinals. It looks like Trey Young did a little taunting of the Knicks after the Hawks win over the Knicks last night in the NBA Cup. Mid-season tournament, whatever you call it. I don't know. I'm still not used to it. In Washington, the Nationals will have the number one pick in Major League Baseball's draft coming up in 2025. They won the lottery at the winter meetings for that spot. Last time they had that pick, they drafted a guy named Bryce Harper. I think he turned out to be all right, you know, just all right. Tonight we got Thursday Night Football, like I said, and you can hear it right here on ESPN Pensacola. We've got the Rams on the road taking on the 49ers. 49ers are a talented team, but the problem is half the team's not playing because they're hurt, and that's really the way it's been for the 49ers all year. The Rams, they are getting healthy, though. It's kind of the polar opposite here, where the 49ers have a lot of guys getting hurt. The Rams have a lot of guys coming back and getting healthy. And Stafford has his full complement of receivers right now. Puka Nacua, Cooper Kupp, they are all not only playing, but they are contributing at a high level. We saw them play really well against the Bills on Sunday. I think on the road in San Francisco, it's going to be a close game. Vegas thinks it's a close game. The line for this favors San Francisco by 3. So it is definitely going to be a close game. But the Rams, like I said, the Rams are just the healthier team right now. I think they're going to be able to get a win tonight. And that is definitely going to bolster their playoff chances for sure. That is going to do it for today's show. War Eagle Weekly coming up next. We'll have more of the Glass Half Full for you coming up tomorrow. Thank you so much for tuning in. I'm Jordan Glass. Hey, have a great Thursday. We'll talk to you tomorrow. War Eagle Weekly is coming up next right here on ESPN Pensacola.